You are listening to Critical End, Episode 3.
The hot sister of Episode 2.
Or possibly retarded. Can we say that? How are you this week?
Pretty good. Episode 3.
It's important for them to know we don't actually talk during the week.
Oh, absolutely not.
Not after that thing with my sister.
We communicate through a thick wall of lawyers.
Ooh. Can I borrow some of your lawyers, by the way?
Well, it depends on if you get them back in the condition that I loan them to you in. We should note that the critical-end.com website, the home of our blog and this podcast, is up and running at full capacity now. More features are going to come, but we've got everything pretty much working like clockwork now. So you're encouraged to go there and check out our written reviews as well as listen to this podcast.
Well, what kind of features can I look forward to in the future, Ryan?
Well, there will be a feature that does your taxes for you.
Oh, boy!
There will be a feature that teaches you how to make delicious meals.
Not now, Ryan. Whatever. I'm doing my taxes.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. I'll wait then.
Yeah.
Let me know. Is that you doing the taxes? Yeah. Is that what the sound is?
Yeah, uh-huh. Hey, okay. In addition to the lawyers, can I borrow some money too?
No. What are we talking about this week, Logan?
This week, we have two more movies to talk about for your listening enjoyment. What's the year in our first movie, Ryan? What I want to say 2003?
2003 is correct.
Oh, wow, look at that. From 2003, we have A Tale of Two Sisters.
Logan, we're a classy podcast. What's the Korean name?
Pad Thai, possibly?
No,
that'd actually be Thai now I think about it. I have no clue what the Korean name would be, but I get the feeling that you're looking at it right now, and it would be?
I can't pronounce it.
Okay. That's a common Korean movie title.
Yes.
So from 2003, A Tale of Two Sisters, a Korean horror film. Mm-hmm. That's right. We will actually watch movies subtitled, just to review them for you.
Yeah, we're classy. What's up now?
And then we saw the much easier on my brain 2009? Yeah,
this nine,
is
nine, yeah. Right?
2009 film, The Uninvited.
Currently playing in theaters.
In theaters near you, which is a remake of A Tale of Two Sisters. See the connection now? See what we're doing with that? Uh-huh, yeah. So we're going to go through the original, tell you what we think about it, and then we will talk about the currently playing remake.
Now, these are both movies that, sort of rely on a mystery element. So, unfortunately, we're not going to probably be able to say as much as we'd like to say because we don't want to give anything away.
Absolutely true. If we learned anything from last week, it's that we should never do this podcast thing again.
That's true.
Good night.
Wouldn't it be great if it just ended there?
Let's see. A Tale of Two Sisters. Give us some story here, Ryan.
Well, A Tale of Two Sisters is the tale of two sisters.
Who, I understand this so far.
At the opening of the movie, are coming back. It's implied from some stay in, I think they flat out say it's a hospital. Stay where they are recovering from some situation. Mm-hmm. And they're coming back with their father to their house, and they are immediately forced to deal with their difficult stepmother, who is a little bit... they just don't get along with the stepmother. And the tension, Logan,
yes,
is amplified when...
I'm so tense.
When weird things start happening...
Oh, no.
Around the house.
And we have to say... Yeah, the stepmother is not just the problem. Their father's there as well, and he doesn't seem to be any help in the situation.
Everyone is very cold to each other.
Yes, it's one of those movies that it's pretty much a silent film almost in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. It's the opening shot. I think the credits read over a shot of wallpaper, and that sort of establishes the kind of movie you're going to see. It's a very it's got a Wes Anderson in a way. If he made horror movies, it'd be something like this, where he just kind of put the camera there. He's like, everyone act in front of this thing. I'll come back after lunch.
I really think that's what he does. So
yeah, well, it's a possibility. And so that's kind of what you need to know you're going to get into if A Tale of Two Sisters. Which is
the, we should, you know, yeah. I mean, the I'm sorry. Yeah, the thing with Korean movies, especially Korean horror movies, which I'm mostly familiar with Korean horror movies. I don't think I've seen many Korean straight movies.
Yeah.
Is
as opposed to the gay ones.
The Korean gay movies, which I do rent, and you know, I'm a fan. The thing with these Korean horror movies is that unlike a lot of American movies, rather than rely on like super quick pacing and you know, a scare a minute, they drag it on for a long time with not uninteresting scenes, but just sort of scenes that just serve to build the tension, but nothing happens at the end of them, which is, you know, which serves to further build the tension until they finally give you that catharsis of the scary moment.
Well, I'll take it a step further, Ryan, and not just say Korean.
Take it a step
horror
further,
movies.
Logan.
I'll dance to that. Not just Korean, but a lot of Asian horror movies. If you've ever seen one, you kind of know what we're talking about already. They do. It works for that in that effect that they do that to really kind of trick you. You wait for the end of every scene, think something scary is about to happen, and it pretty much keeps you on the edge of your seat the whole time. However, it reaches a point where nothing scary happens. You kind of lean back and you recline. You're like, okay, I guess I'm just in this now.
Yeah, that's the danger.
Which yes, and exactly. And the best ones kind of balance it, and they know when to go back and forth. And A Tale of Two Sisters, to be honest, is not one of the best ones.
No. The idea is that if you're going to do a long stretch where nothing happens really, mm-hmm. You better pay that off with a great moment when something does happen.
Unlike this podcast.
But and the thing is, with Tale of Two Sisters, I felt like the payoffs were absolutely not worth the wait. I actually was very serious about this movie. I had heard that it was good. I was trying to enjoy it, but I would often just literally catch myself being like, "Well, I guess I need eggs. I probably should get a haircut this weekend." Uh-huh. Like really wandering off, and I actually had to rewind a few times just to make sure I didn't miss anything. But no, I didn't miss anything. Nothing was actually happening.
Well, you're right. A Tale of Two Sisters has a huge following, both in Korea, where it was the highest grossing horror film of all time. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it still stands as that, but. And in America, where you can go through IMDb or go through Netflix, and you'll see tons of people who stand by this movie, giving it the highest ratings. One guy even said it knocked Amadeus off as like the greatest this film ever made. I'm kind of like, okay, you're knocking off like an Oscar-winning film, a drama.
I like that those are his two top movies.
Yeah, Amadeus and A Tale of Two Sisters.
That's a great double feature.
But like I said, it's not the best as far as pacing goes, but you could do worse with Asian horror movies, and I've done a lot worse.
Oh, sure. No, it's not an awful movie, but the thing is, I find it pretty, you know, I guess straightforward. The things that happen are it's supernatural in nature, at least on the surface of it. And there is the sort of standard, you know, The Ring, crawly ghost. This might actually predate The Ring, so I'm not actually positive about that. But well, I'm not saying it's derivative of The Ring. I'm just saying. It's exactly what you expect from these kinds of movies. Sort of a creepy female ghost. She kind of like, you know, walks around in a scary, disjointed way, and you know, gets all up in your face and then disappears. I mean, it's very standard, and it's never much more than that. At least for the supernatural aspects, there are some parts of this movie I don't want to ruin that go beyond and are actually very interesting to see. But it's just not worth it for the stuff that doesn't happen in the film.
Well, I think you're right in some aspects. When nothing's happening, the movie, you're right. After a while, you get kind of tired of nothing happening. Mm-hmm. And you really just kind of sit. I felt like I was sitting there waiting for the big reveal to find out what exactly was going on. However, when something does happen, I thought it was very visually good. And I thought a lot of this movie is actually scary, too. About two scenes come to mind, and they were both kind of redone for the remake. But in one sort of the same and one completely different, mm-hmm. Which we'll get to more when we talk about the remake.
Well,
we thought about
you
that.
You mentioned you mentioned waiting to see what was going on, and that's the key thing because it's very confusing.
Very much so.
Things happen. People talk to. You know, I wish I could be more specific here, but I want to preserve the mystery even for this movie that I think is perhaps not the best. But people have exchanges of dialogue that you just don't understand. I actually thought that it was being poorly translated, and that's why I didn't understand it. Mm-hmm. And then the more I got it, and once I saw the ending, I realized, oh no, actually that was intentional. But it's actually just confusing. You'll have this whole, like, you'll wait for something interesting to happen. You'll get to a scene where people are sort of fighting verbally with each other, and you think, okay, here's something interesting is going to happen. You won't understand what happened, and then back to nothing happening. Yes, this is to preserve a mystery that is revealed at the end, but I think the end It just wasn't worth it, and it's actually, I don't know, it's a little bit confusing even at the end as to what happened, to the point where I had to look it up. I looked up the plot online on Wikipedia, thinking surely I must have been, I must have missed something, and I read a very complete list of the plot, and I'm like, no, I actually caught everything. It's just a little bit nebulous as to what it all meant. Sorry to ramble on about that.
No. I'm trying to think what I was going to say. Nice weather, huh? Okay, with A Tale of Two Sisters, I guess I should preference this by saying that I've actually seen it twice. I watched it again, in preparation for this podcast and for seeing The Uninvited. Because of that, knowing where the movie was going, I think I understood it a bit more.
That's probably the case.
I was confused the first time, though, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't quite. I don't know. I think knowing where the movie's going, I enjoyed it slightly better because I knew what to look for. And you're right. It takes a long time to get there. And this is the biggest flaw of this film, in my opinion, is that a great movie that is this type of movie that is supposed to have a big twist drops hints along the way. That of what the twist could possibly be. This movie doesn't do that. Instead, it dumps the entire backstory of why the twist is at the very end of the movie.
Sure.
Which doesn't work. I think that they could have chopped that up a little bit and spread it throughout the movie in small scenes, so we slowly discover it as the characters are discovering what's going on exactly.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think it almost seemed like a choose-your-own-adventure movie where the ending could have been anything. I mean, there was nothing. The ending that you get is not supported by anything. I won't say that. It's just not dependent on anything prior to it. It's you see little hints. You know, I assume if you watch it again, you probably disagree with me. If you've seen it again, you probably did see things that heavily lead up to the ending. But I feel like it could have been like, or what do you think of this? Like, it could have been Clue. It's a Korean horror Clue where at the end it's like, depending on what theater you at, the butler did it. You know, I mean.
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of clues there early on, to be honest with you. In fact, there's one gigantic scene that screams pretty much at the person watching the movie that something is not right here. Everything's going on. Mm-hmm. And I'll go ahead and say this without ruining anything at all. It's the dinner scene, Ryan, so you'll know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that. Thinking back, I thought, okay, now I understand that scene. That was actually kind of cool.
Yeah, that scene, when you see it, it confuses the hell out of you, and it works in a way because you don't know yet, and it just turns out to be creepy. Mm-hmm. But later on, that scene makes perfect sense, and that scene actually pays off, but only at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the scares at the end make sense. I'm not saying that the end doesn't make any sense. The problem is that it's all at the end. And unlike The Uninvited, unlike The Uninvited, they don't do the typical American thing of going back and telling you, oh, remember when this happened in the movie? Well, this is why this happened. Instead, they just dump the whole twist on you and expect you to go back and put it back together. I'm not complaining. I think that's a good thing. They don't think the audience is stupid in any way.
Well, I wanted them. To show me the specific moments that were related to the twist because I wanted to make sure that I knew what they were trying to say. And I mean, I find myself to be a genius. I don't think I usually have trouble putting the plot of movies together. But this one, I was like, wait, are they saying what I think they're saying? And if so, you know, what's the point? Like, I don't quite get it. And then the thing is, the end. You know, there's a sort of a second twist at the very end that sort of shows you the instigating motivation behind a certain character's behavior, okay?
Yes.
You following me? And are you jive talking? And I think that part was unbelievable and didn't make sense. And I read that this was actually based on a Korean folktale.
Yeah.
And in the context of a folktale, I see why that would make sense. But as a modern horror movie that takes place today, I found it unbelievable.
Well, I actually liked the second twist ending. Because right when they reveal the first one to you, you're like, okay, now this doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Because how did this happen? How did this happen? How did this happen? Well, you don't really quite realize that you have a second twist coming. So when the second twist does arrive, you're like, okay, well, that makes more sense now. The only problem is, once again, everything's at the very end of this movie. So you kind of expect it to end 40 minutes before it does. They tell you what's going on. You're like, okay, end of movie. You're like, no, wait, why am I still getting more and more backstory? And then they kind of tell you what's going on again. You're like, okay, end of movie. Like, no, here's another scare for you. And I keep saying, my only problem with this movie really is at the end. But
well, see, the thing is, you've said two things. You've said that the movie doesn't give you anything until the end, and then you said that that's the only problem, you know?
Yeah, I'm the fact that it doesn't give you anything at the end, until the end, I think is, like I said, that's the problem. Mm-hmm. Because if they would have chopped this up and kind of spread it throughout the movie, and hit it more at what we were, you know, what was coming, instead of just dumping all of it on us, that's the biggest problem. But along those same lines, what I did enjoy was the fact that it doesn't go back and tell us where that should take place, that we had to put that together ourselves. And this is actually, if you look at any film with gigantic twists at the end, what comes to mind, completely unrelated, but Hitchcock's Psycho, and one of my personal favorites, American Psycho, those are two films that at the end, when they reveal their twists, they don't go back and put those scenes in context that you saw earlier. And so, in that way, you have to realize it kind of works. Those are films from two great directors that don't tell the, don't actually give us the scenes over again and tell us, you know.
Well,
not to compare, to be honest, I wouldn't compare this movie to those
two,
though.
No, okay, I do
agree
with you.
That structure kind of works, yeah.
I agree with you. They're sort of separate from this movie, though, because, I think I can reveal the ending of Psycho, right?
Oh, yeah, oh, that's, okay. That was good, yeah.
Psycho,
It was a sled, folks.
Yes, it turns out it was, Psycho, it turns out that she was a man all along. No, actually, it kind of does. It turns out that, obviously, Norman Bates, his mother has been dead, and he's the killer. So, the thing is, that doesn't need much explanation because we never saw the mother in the first place. So we heard her, and you can just assume it was all in his head, and then it's not like we have to go back and see the scene again without the mother, you know what I mean?
Well, we have, I know where you're going for. I could argue with that, because, you know, we see scenes of him in the shadow talking to her through the window, and...
Yeah, but you can basically... you don't need to see that scene again, because you don't really ever see her.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You don't need to see it again without her to show that it was in his head, because you assume it was in his head. You never saw her in the first place. And then with American Psycho, they were purposely leaving the ending a little ambiguous. So... And that worked for that movie. So, I mean, you don't want to see it out again, because that would be definitive as to how it actually happened.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe you can apply one of those rules to Tale of Two Sisters, but I kind of think it was confusing enough that I wanted to see the specifics so I knew what was actually happening.
Well, I guess when it comes down to it, I don't like when movies talk down to me, and I don't feel like A Tale of Two Sisters did that. I feel the biggest flaw is that it's paced somewhat bad. I won't say terror. It's not paced really bad. It's paced somewhat bad, and they just dump everything on you in the very end. I think they could have chopped that up and spread it throughout the movie, and it would have been a much better movie. But I think you're right. It all relies heavily on the big twist, and once that arrives, you just kind of have to keep sitting there, and more keeps coming.
Yeah, actually, I think we got off on the wrong twist, because I think we're talking about different twists. I actually mentally skipped over one of the twists, and the twist that you're talking about, I think it's actually funny that the movie goes on for as long as it does after that, because once that it's revealed, you would think the characters would start acting differently towards each other, and they don't. So.
Well, like I said, once the first twist is revealed, then you're actually left with more questions, and you don't quite expect there to be another twist. You just expect them not to explain that. But then a lot of stuff is explained at the second twist. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Final verdict on A Tale of Two Sisters? Somewhat of a confusing review, I'll admit.
It's
kind of an odd stance on this movie.
Well, real quick, because we couldn't say anything about the plot, really.
I think this is why it's turning out to be a confusing review. I feel like we can't quite reveal these big twists, and that's what we're both complaining about.
All right, but I will say that it was visually well directed. I liked the cinematography. There were some really cool scenes, especially towards the end. And other than the pacing, I think that the direction was pretty cool, and it's fun to see just for that. I thought that it wasn't a terrible movie. It just wasn't as impressed as I wanted to be. So I kind of went between a 5 and a 6. And to be honest, I chose a 5. I'm now kind of thinking back, but I'm going to stick with it. I'll say it's a 5 out of 10.
Okay. We're actually reversed on this. I'm going to go with a 6. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that, to be honest with you, is because I've seen so many bad... I pretty much just rent every Asian horror film I come across, and I've seen so many bad ones.
Right.
And this does not follow that. I think this is a good movie. However, if you are planning to see The Uninvited, I would not recommend seeing this first. I'd recommend seeing The Uninvited, and we'll get to why in a second. But first, We have some reader questions,
right? Oh, now, you know, I'm glad we have some real reader questions, because last show, our listeners, our, I should call them listener questions, actually. Last show, our listeners, well, they might read the blog. It could be both. You know, we didn't have any listener questions. We had to do that Jonas Brothers thing, so it's good to hear that we actually have some real ones this week.
Well, I'll start by saying that Jonas Brothers thing is pretty lame. I'm glad that we have actual fans now. None of which who wrote into us, because this week's questions actually come from this this month's Esquire. It is the style question section.
I just want to be clear that these are also not questions for our podcast.
They are in no way related to this podcast. But they do ask about how to dress awesome.
Well, we know about that.
I figure since this is an audio podcast, these people have no clue how we're actually dressed right now, Ryan.
That's true.
So we can pretty much claim that we're experts on how to dress.
All right, well, I mean, I personally am. That's just a coincidence, but I am.
Well, then let me address some of these questions to you.
Okay.
Let me put my awesome stylish glasses on here to start with.
Oh, man.
Our first question comes from Minnesota, all the way from Minnesota. It's great to know we have a fan in Minnesota.
Minnesota, home of Mystery Science Theater.
Well, Jason Shaw from St. Louis Park, Minnesota, says, I just bought my first tuxedo, and I wanted a classic style. The jacket is single-breasted with notched lapels, the shirt has a wing collar, and the pants have cuffs. Have I done anything wrong?
Well,
Jason Shaw from St. Louis Park, Minnesota. Go ahead, Ryan. I'll let you take this one.
I hope Jason can get his money back.
Okay.
Because he has missed out on a few things. First of all, the nacho collar, it sounds like a great idea, right?
Ryan, I think let me go back through here. Jason Shaw from St. Louis Park, Minnesota. He's writing about the wing collar.
The wing. I heard,
so if anything, your joke should have been went towards hot wings or something like that.
What was the nacho thing?
Nachos. I don't know where you get nachos.
You said notched
from.
Something.
No. Okay, not the collar. No one wears notched collars. His it's a single-breasted notched lapel.
Logan, let me tell you about what Jason's mistake was.
Okay, go ahead.
The nacho. Lapel.
Yes,
a lot of people want to do it.
Uh huh. Yes.
You get hungry.
I love how you're sticking with the nacho joke still. You're like, no, let me tell you about the nacho.
All right, Logan. Second thing you did wrong.
Okay, yes.
Everyone,
no, Jason, not me.
I said he.
Okay.
He went to buy a tuxedo, and he didn't consult the movie guys, us, first, which I guess is just now what I decided to call us. Because we could easily have told him that we learned from the James Bond series that if you're going to buy a tuxedo, it better have a bunch of cool gadgets that it, you know, integrated into it.
Exactly.
So, a couple things you need to look for in your tuxedo. Spinning razor blade bow tie.
Okay. Check.
Laser cufflinks.
Okay.
Wacky moon shoes.
Wacky
you can buy those
shoes.
With the tuxedo.
Tuxedo.
A suspenders.
What color do you get your wacky moon shoes in, Ryan?
Oh, I prefer chartreuse.
Okay, chartreuse.
Not always a popular choice. I'm going to be different. You have to get the suspenders that are also an AK-47.
No, I'll disagree on this.
Okay.
Jason, ignore Ryan, okay? Because I've never met a single person who wears suspenders with their tuxedo, especially James Bond. That would be the lamest James Bond in the room. That'd be like the Timothy Dalton of James Bond.
Now, here's what you're forgetting.
Coming into the room.
James Bond is a movie. You have to be practical. In real life, you need suspenders that are an AK-47. Of course, James Bond could have, you know, a cigarette case that was an AK-47. That is not practical for real life.
Oh, okay. I got you now then. Okay, continue then.
And, of course, the final component is a classy James Bond swagger in your step, which you can also purchase for an additional fee. There's a technician that will help you work on that.
If I have this right, all they really do is tighten the crotch area of the pants.
Well, they do.
And the rest just falls into place.
Also,
make sure not to sign that contract that limits you from wearing a tux in any other movie you're in.
That's true. If you ever want to make the Thomas Crown Affair, you're going to regret that.
Exactly. That's right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Jason, I hope we answered your question well.
All right.
And I'd say you did a great job on that one, Ryan.
Well, you know, I am an expert of things.
Job filling the. So, can I? What are you wearing right now?
Well, I'm glad you asked. I'm wearing corduroy pants.
Okay, yeah.
Corduroy pants. I'm wearing these sort of nice leather slippers. I've got a sort of a silky kind of yellow shirt.
This podcast just got so gay. Yeah. Moving on.
And yeah. I have a red smoking
jacket. Like, oh, no, there's more.
No,
go ahead.
No, I have this red smoking jacket sitting by the hearth with my podcast recording software. And I've got a pipe and a fez and a fake goatee.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is How to Make Love the Ryan the Georgie Way.
I'm ready.
Jonathan Howard from Louisville, Kentucky writes,
I'm from Kentucky. Should I wear clothes?
What is the deal of my clothes? I'd like to know your thoughts on necklaces. This is a man. I'm interested in a simple necklace and maybe something with a cross or a horseshoe on it.
Well,
Jonathan Howard, Louisville, Kentucky.
Jonathan,
thoughts on necklace, first of all, Ryan. Not what the necklace should be so much as...
Necklaces,
what do you think, Jonathan's...
General.
Yeah, necklaces in general for Jonathan Howard in Louisville, Kentucky.
Well, a classy necklace on a woman is always nice. You're speaking specifically of male necklaces,
as I understand it.
You know, it's the thing with necklaces that I've learned from one of my personal idols, Flava Flav, is that you should always have the largest and most flashy symbol of who you are as a person attached to your neck by a metal chain. Mr. T, of course, knew this as well.
And it better keep great time as well.
Oh, absolutely. But if maybe your look is timeless and you don't need that. You something else symbolizes you. Perhaps you really like the band The Police, for example.
Okay, I do.
So oh, good. It's perfect for you.
Okay. What should I wear?
Well, you should wear a framed picture of Sting.
I'm way ahead of you.
Are you wearing this now?
Yes.
It's amazing.
With a little locket of his hair next.
Yes,
to it.
That's what I was gonna say.
Uh-huh. Well, see, this is why we're great for this podcast.
This is really a question for you, and I didn't mean to steal it, knowing that you're wearing that necklace.
My necklace advice to Jonathan Howard of Louisville, Kentucky, is if you're going to do it, go all the way. Get a Star David.
That's my advice for other things as well.
Something like that. Get a make sure you're wearing the big shirt collar.
Sure.
Nice and open. If you need to get a fake patch of chest hair, do it, because that really adds to the whole mystique of things. To have the hair there underneath the gold necklace. Make sure it's gold.
A chest merkin, in other words.
A chest merkin. And it qualifies as the perfect porn star look. Mm-hmm. And it's or Val Kilmer, one of the two.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the star. I'm glad you mentioned the Star of David, because you're really not serving your god of choice unless you put the most obvious symbol of your religion around your neck and parade it around.
And I would actually recommend a cross and a star, David.
Sure.
Because Jesus was Jewish, so, why not mix the two a little bit?
I promote interreligion, cooperation. I think they should be shaking hands, the two.
Yeah, that's why I have that picture of Sting shaking hands with the Pope that I wear around my neck.
That's true. And that's actually a fold-out. You actually have to fold that out for people to see it.
I have a wide neck.
Yeah, I know. I'm
pure man.
I don't want to say anything about it, but you do.
Well, our final question... Mm-hmm. Comes all the way from Canada, eh?
Hey, maybe Ren is listening.
No, not hey, A.
Oh, hey.
Hey, yeah, see, that's Canadian.
Hey.
Talk for good day, how are you?
Sit
I think that's
it.
What they mean when they say A. No, that's the font. No. I can't do this with
we'll
you,
just
okay?
Read the
you
thing.
The thing from John in Alberta, Canada, wants something or other. I don't know. Let me read this.
All right.
I want to start wearing hats more often. But I'm confused about when and where to keep them on and take them off. What is the proper etiquette? And how do hat wearers deal with tight hats and hat hair?
John, what's his name?
John. That's all. He wants to remain anonymous, I guess. John. That's a real name.
That's an excellent question. First of all, where to keep the hat? On your head. That's the first thing to know about that.
Did you actually ask that? I just read them. Let me see.
I don't know. That's what I heard. Okay. I didn't.
When and where to keep them on.
Oh, when and where to keep them on.
Yes,
he could have maybe phrased that better.
Yeah.
But no, it's etiquette. It's an etiquette question that is perhaps outside my purview, being a style expert, not an etiquette expert. Because if I had an excellent hat, Logan, and I do, I'm not wearing it now. I am wearing the fez, which is my second best hat.
Yeah.
But if I had an excellent hat, I would wear it whenever I felt appropriate and not kowtow to society by taking it off in church, court, weddings, these kinds of locations.
Yeah.
But if he's concerned about following the norm, you should check a venue before you go. Call ahead to the club. Call ahead to your cousins. Find out what their hat policy is. Often they'll have a posted hat policy. If you see, you know, that the picture, a lot of people see that picture. It says wet floor and see the guys like flipping backwards, you know, little fake guy.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That is a place you don't want to wear a hat. It's a confusing symbol, but that's what it means.
Well, Ryan, I've been all over this big crazy world called Earth. And
you're a journeyman, I would say.
I've made my rounds. Mm-hmm. I've been around the block a few times. It's not my first barbecue. And I can say that I think I know when and where to wear a hat.
Well, break it
down. I think I know everywhere to wear a hat. Why don't write off some places, and I'll tell you what's good for hat wearing and for the non-hat wearing.
Your local wave pool.
The wave pool is good. It will accent your bathing suit and your thighs a bit.
Okay. Is there any danger of swimming with a hat, or is that okay?
You strap it on. Okay. And then tie down your hat as well.
Okay, that's fair. What about a car show?
The car shows are not good for hats, despite what you may think. You're there for the cars, not to see what the latest fashion in hats is.
You don't want to be distracting, is what you're saying.
Exactly. And, you know, and when it comes to hats, I'll go ahead and say this. When it comes to hats, the bigger the better. Mm-hmm. You want to go as big as possible. It's if the United States wore a hat, it'd be Texas. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure your hat is huge. And so that's why the car show would not be good, because it is distracting that way. If you're wearing a hat in church, which is completely, absolutely fine, make sure, you know, you're not sitting in front of somebody, because everyone wants to see, you know, if Jesus is coming back, whatever you go to church for.
Sure.
So sit towards the back. Ditto for movie theaters, but thankfully now most is stadium seating. Uh-huh. So you're fine for a big hat.
And what about a gun show?
A gun show is awesome, because, it's a gun show.
Did you wear a hat at the gun show? Is what I'm asking.
Yeah, you. I mean, if you carry guns, you should carry hats with you as well. Why not? I think guns and hats kind of go hand in hand.
Okay.
I mean, they're trying to fill that whole loophole gun show rule or something like that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't apply to hats, so wear them while the wearing's good.
All right, final.
Before you know it, we'll have to have a license for hats.
You know, I tell you, with the Democrats in office, anything is possible.
I know. Hat license.
My final question, could I wear a hat on my tour of a Cheerios factory when I go to see how the Cheerios are made?
Is this a personal tour just for you, or is it a lot of people involved?
Well, I have a friend who works there, and he's going to get me in just sort of a personal thing. But, I mean, there are you know, structured tours, but he's going to get me into the places that they don't usually show everybody.
Well, Ryan, I know you you moonlight as a health inspector.
I do.
Is this just an excuse to sneak your big camera in to record the going on behind the scenes at the Cheerio factory?
The camera hat is not something I'm encouraged to discuss outside of work.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna go ahead and call foul on this one. Hmm? And tell you that your friend's instantly gonna think your camera's in the hat.
No matter what my, you know, even if it isn't.
Even if it isn't. Because even if it's on the hat, I know you're going to be carrying that huge bag that you hide the camera in.
That's true. I mean, I don't know what bag you're talking about.
The Cheerio Factory, I like Cheerios, so don't shut that down, Mr. Health Inspector.
That's your 60s.
That's my plea. I'm gonna get my pal Sting and the Pope together, and we're going to write a song called that.
That's fair.
Please don't shut it down, Mr.
Health
Inspector.
Yes. What I'm hearing is that your hat implies your intentions to the world.
Yeah, exactly. So make sure you get a hat that speaks your mind. This is the sum up. The bigger, the better. No car shows, and never on Tuesdays.
Okay. Well, I think that we've really helped the children. Or
awesome.
Something.
Excellent questions this week. Thank you.
That was good.
Oh, thank you, John from Canada. Jonathan from Canada, Kentucky. Ted. Wait.
Did you lose all ability to read or something? Are you okay over there?
And Jason Shaw from St. Louis Park, Minnesota. Hey!
Excellent.
Okay, enough of that.
On the off chance that any of our listeners actually do have questions they'd like talked about in the show, if you go to critical-n.com and hit the contact link, we have a little contact form there. Just ask any questions there. And if you specifically want to be read on the show, make a note that you'd like to have it read on the show in your message.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I forgot that we hopefully plan on getting real questions one day.
I'm having too much fun with this, but whatever.
Yeah, seriously. Well, whatever they write in, we'll just change a few key words and make it about us.
Sure. I'll just write all my questions as if they came from you, and you can write the ones that came from me, and it'll be great.
Oh, boy. Yeah, sounds good.
Keep
it under your hat.
I seem to remember that we were talking about horror movies.
The Uninvited, currently playing in theaters. This one is a timely one to talk about, and it's the only reason we saw A Tale of Two Sisters too.
It's the American remake.
Yes.
And let me just save all of our readers an hour and a half of mental anguish. You do know that girl. She's the girl from Lemony Snicket.
Ah, thank you.
Yes.
I was sleepless, Ryan, for days.
You could have just looked it up, and, I mean, at some point.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. I was just hoping she'd call and tell me who she was.
That's
all
how I found
together
out.
Now.
She did not call me.
So she called you then, huh?
Yeah, and it's actually a little disturbing because there are some scenes where she's, you know, her character's kind of sexualized, but she really does still look 14. So it's kind of disturbing.
Yeah.
But she's, in actuality,
what's
she's,
more disturbing is that you're getting phone calls from 14-year-olds. Oh, she's 20?
No, she's 20 years old. This actress is 20.
Oh, then please call me too.
never mind. anyway, but yeah. the American version is what you would expect from an American remake in terms of making it, you know, speeding it up, glossing it up, making it the Hollywood, you know, quick buck version essentially of an Asian movie. However, in this case,
let's jump into this, Ryan. Okay. I'm saying this is why it doesn't work, and this is one of the things I don't like about it. So, what do you have to say about this?
Well, I was about to say what I had to say, and you're like, "Wait,
I don't care. Let me tell you
to give an intro that you're going to say what you're going to say rather than you saying it." No, okay. So, what? I don't know what I'm going to say now.
Oh, good. I distracted you. I win.
Yeah, damn it.
The end, folks.
Well, Logan owns the blog and podcast now. That was the bet. And I will be seeing you only in guest appearances. No. So what I think is, in this case, and I will rarely say this. I don't remember a time I've ever said it before. The American slightly dumbed... Well, I won't say dumbed down. But the American... Well, okay, I'll say it. The American dumbed down version is superior. And the only reason is because that it fixes the issues I had with the original. It's not slow, keeps everything moving. I mean, it's paced pretty well, but it still keeps everything moving nicely. It's you know, it holds your attention. It's still directed pretty visually interestingly, and they change aspects of the story from the original. Now, at first, I thought they were just changing things just to change things, but in actuality, it actually kind of works to its favor. They change some key things about the story of the original while amazingly still keeping the feeling and the motif, I guess, of the original. So they change just enough for you to, if you've seen the original, be surprised by where it goes, because it is very... While certain twists are absolutely the same, it still has some very different twists. And I actually, while watching it, thought I'd actually, and I never have said this, I wish I hadn't seen the original first. Because this, I think, is a better movie. And if I, on top of that, of seeing it, had not seen the original and had not known what the big twist was going to be, I think I would have enjoyed it even more. Now, it's got some flaws, but I ultimately thought it was superior.
I think this is... Okay, based on what you said, this is why I said earlier that if you have not seen the original, just go see The Uninvited now. Mm-hmm. That's not to imply that it's a better movie. I think it's a much lesser film. Mm-hmm. Well, not much lesser. It's a lesser film, I think.
So we disagree here.
Yeah, we are disagreeing. This is the beginning of the disagreement.
This is the beginning of the end. This is our last
problem,
show.
I feel like I can't give an accurate assessment of The Uninvited because my biggest problem lies with stuff I already knew from the original film. Mm-hmm. However, with The Uninvited, I feel it's just way painfully too obvious, first of all, what one of the twists is. Mm-hmm. Like we said with Tale of Two Sisters, there's two twists to this film as well. However, they've changed one of them. I don't know if it's because... if they didn't want to mess so much with Tale of Two Sisters, I don't know why that was exactly. But to be honest, the second twist in this movie doesn't really so much work in its favor. And The Uninvited, it doesn't work as well as it did in Tale of Two Sisters, because the second twist really is thrown in at the very, very end of the movie. Although I guess, you know, the one right before the credits now I'm thinking about could actually be a third twist.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out which twist is which that you were discussing. Yeah. So,
well, the first twist is the same first twist from Tale of Two Sisters.
Okay, I agree.
And I think it's... And I think Tale of Two Sisters does a great job of dealing with that twist in a way that makes a lot more sense than it did in The Uninvited. The Uninvited, this twist to me is way painfully too obvious from the very beginning. And like I said, it's really hard for me to argue this point without giving anything away, so I might as well just give up here. I'll concede this to you, Ryan. Mm-hmm. But you're saying pretty much you liked these, we'll say, two or three twists in The Uninvited better?
It's not so much that the twists themselves were better. I think that they took place in a better... Well, okay, yeah, I did like them better, yeah.
Okay. The other thing is... what you were saying about it, this movie being dumbed down, it's absolutely true. And I guess you didn't find that as painful as I did. But after seeing A Tale of Two Sisters, which is this moody, slow-moving movie that doesn't treat the audience stupid in any way, we get the typical, I imagine, like, the fat cat producer sitting in Hollywood. It's like, yeah, let's just turn this into a PG-13 teen fest. And that's exactly what this is. They've added a love interest just so they can throw in talk of sex scenes and kissing scenes. So we got sex, we got girls running around in bathing suits for really no apparent reason.
That's true.
We got the typical Asian horror remake, Americanized setting of North Pacific, pretty much main setting, which we've seen over and over again in The Ring, mm-hmm. Things like that. We've got creepy kids now for no reason, which didn't have any implication in the original at all.
Yeah, I would agree that made no sense. I mean, it did make sense, but it was for no reason, yes.
And now, to move the plot along at better pacing, we have explosions! I'm kind of like, okay, well, this to me, it just seems all too typical. They just took something that, I won't say was brilliant, but something smart, and they really just rearranged it in a way that, to make it a popcorn movie. But this movie is not masquerading as a popcorn movie. Unlike My Bloody Valentine, it's not that. This movie is coming across as a smart, intelligent film that's tricking you, that thinks it's tricking you, but it's not. And, because of that, I think The Uninvited kind of fails, but it fails, in my opinion, as a remake. And this is, like I said, a really strong point I have, that if you haven't seen A Tale of Two Sisters, this movie might actually work a lot better for you. And personally, I think my review would be different if I had not seen A Tale of Two Sisters. And I think, Ryan, you're coming at this review more in a way where you're kind of trying to ignore Tale of Two Sisters.
Well, I am trying to, but the thing is, I think that it's not as hard as you make it out to be to do so. I wish it were easier, but the thing is, I feel like this is also a completely different genre of film. The Tale of Two Sisters really is trying to be a horror movie. This Uninvited is much more of a thriller mystery. There aren't really many scares in it. There are some supernatural elements. But ultimately, I would almost not be surprised to see the same level of supernatural elements in a mystery horror, a thriller movie, rather than a horror movie. I mean,
well, there aren't. Sorry.
Well, what I'm saying is, because of that, I felt like the twist actually worked all right. Like it would have fooled me if I didn't know it was coming, perhaps. Because I was expecting, I sort of, rather than assuming there was going to be a twist, which I would in a horror movie, I start going along this mindset of mystery thriller, and I was like, actually, it's more about this character trying to survive the situation, and maybe it is as straightforward as it actually seems it is.
Well, it's not, there really is. You're waiting around for a twist. And to be honest, that's what the audience is too. They've seen this movie before. It's called The Ring, and every other Asian American remake since then. Mm-hmm. So they know there's a twist coming. You're saying there's not many scares because the movie's not scary. There are a lot of like pseudo scares in the movie. They're trying to scare you. Like I said, they have creepy kids now for no reason. I think it's completely a horror movie, not so much a mystery thriller. There's that aspect to it with her stepmom, and you get this from the trailer. She's trying to figure out whether or not her stepmom's evil. And so somehow along the way, scary kids get thrown in that are supposed to all lead up to whether or not what's happening, whether or not she's evil, and a bunch of other things. And it just doesn't pay off anything. It creates plot holes, adding stuff that wasn't in the original. And once again, I'm finding myself arguing about it as a remake.
Yeah.
And I think the best judge here would be someone who hasn't seen the original.
I completely agree. I think we're in sort of a bad position.
Yeah, all my arguments are coming at it as a remake of a film that was just somewhat okay to begin with. But I'm basing all that, I don't know, it's hard to look at it, for me at least, as a separate film altogether. Although it does try to do that. I can give it that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really does. They change enough of it, and it's not like, oh, now she's wearing a green coat. I mean, they change, you know, key parts of the plot and still end up making it feel kind of like the original. But I think that's one of its successes. I feel like these are two movies based on the same idea rather than one being a remake of the other.
Well, see, this is when I start thinking that, okay, well, if they would have just taken this a step further and changed this and this, they could have just had a whole new movie, so why not have done that? why just buy up all these Asian horror movies and remake them in America?
That's a whole separate argument, but I agree with you. I mean,
yeah, it's. But I really think the best judge of this movie would be someone who hasn't seen the original, which is why I'm telling you, as a listener, to if you haven't seen the original, don't bother. Go see The Uninvited. Mm-hmm. I'd love to actually hear what you think, if anyone wants to write in or let us know.
Yeah.
I'm really curious as what if you saw any of the twists coming right away, as I thought it was pretty obvious. I guess you got more involved with this, the new parts of the story, Ryan?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I kind of bought into it. I think that it's I think you're right. I think that order is ideal. You should see Uninvited, see if you actually are fooled by it or are interested in it. And then if you feel like going to see Tale of Two Sisters to see if it was better, then you're watching it from the position of you, Logan, watching it the second time, where you can appreciate some of the stuff that's coming up, knowing kind of where it's going. And you'll still also be surprised because the ending's kind of different.
Yes. Now, I feel like I'm just coming down this movie and have nothing good to say. I gave it an actual higher rating than you would think, based on what I've said so far. I have to say that all the acting was really good in this movie.
Elizabeth Banks, we've talked about her before. I'll just buy her in anything.
It's absolutely true. It's the Paul Rudd effect. And maybe that's why all the movies she's made with Paul Rudd, with like three or four of them, have actually been all good.
Yeah.
It's anything that you throw her in, she seems to do a great job at. She just adapts to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not... Going in, I was not thinking I'd be sold. After seeing her only like purely comedies, I did not think I'd be sold in her in this role.
Yeah, this is smart.
But she did a great job.
It's a smart movie for her to do in terms of trying to broaden her appeal, showing she can do this kind of a role too.
Yeah, and to keep with the mystery, like I said, based on the trailer, you know that we're trying to figure out whether or not she's evil. Based on the mystery involved in the character, she does a great job of reading lines in such a way where you can't quite put it together.
That's true.
And so I have to give her extra bonus points for acting this. Everyone else just kind of does the usual.
Let's be fair. The father, who's a guy, the character actor, I can't remember his name, but I've seen him in everything. He's really good.
He is good. He's the only character to me that sort of like stumbled through the film, only because he's the almost unnecessary in some ways. He's obviously there for a reason, but he's not really there so much for driving the plot.
Well, he's a prop, you know.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
right.
He's the MacGuffin almost of the movie. He's sort of what everybody wants.
And the other girl, the one sister, the main character from.
Let me snick it.
Yes,
Emily Browning.
Who I thought did a great job.
Yeah.
The other sister really just seemed to be in there to be like, I'm always drunk, I'm a party animal. I guess she was just something for frat boys to look at. I was a little brought down. I mean, she did a great job portraying the character the way it was written, but she was just in there making pop culture jokes and that sort of thing.
No,
and
yeah.
That's once again Americanizing this.
She was the weakest link of the film. I think that she...
She was hired for how she looked in a bathing suit, probably.
You know, that's essentially it, which, you know, it was all right.
Which, by the way, they intro her in that scene, and then she manages to just run around in it the rest of the movie.
Yeah, she's never
like, okay,
not
that's
in those
a bit
films,
odd.
Which actually... Yeah. Well, anyway, don't want to... Yeah, so...
Yeah. Final verdict then on The Uninvited. I feel like I guess we got through this one a lot better than Tale of Two Sisters.
Yeah.
I think this was a little less confusing. I just want to explain that once again, a remake standpoint, I did not like it.
Well, I did the same sort of flip flopping between these movies as I did with Tale of Two Sisters, going between a 6 and a 7. To be honest with you, it's going to sound like I rated this higher. I did end up giving it a 7. It's not a 7 psychological horror movie. It's like it's a 7 thriller. It's like a 7 popcorn film. It reminds me very much of Hide and Seek, the De Niro Dakota Fanning movie, you know, where it's like there's psychological stuff going on. I'm not saying it's brilliant. I'm just saying I enjoyed it on a popcorn movie level.
I feel like it was trying to. It wasn't trying to be a popcorn movie. In the same way that I guess The Unborn wasn't trying. It thought it was intelligent horror art, while instead I thought it was the opposite. But this is our first really big disagreement, Ryan. I'm going to go with 4.
Yeah.
The Uninvited, and I'll stand by that. However, I'm really gonna trust the person who hasn't seen Tale of Two Sisters on this.
Maybe my sort of relative dislike of Tale of Two Sisters colored my opinion of this movie, where I was just like, you know, finally somebody kind of just speeds it up a bit, or you know. And again, this is so atypical for me to say that the American remake is better, but you know, oh well, I'll let this exception stand.
I will actually say that I thought, and I'll probably get hate mail for this, I thought The Ring remake and The Grudge remake were both better than the original. So this is, to me, I don't know, I feel like I can judge it fairly in that way. But at the same time, if you're someone who's interested in A Tale of Two Sisters at all, you'll probably like it better.
Like Tale of Two Sisters better or Uninvited better?
Yeah, I think you'll... I mean, if you're someone who will take the time to sit down and watch an Asian subtitled horror film that you know is going to be really slow, I think you're going to get more invested in that. Well, if you just kind of want like a quick movie to enjoy, you're going to get more into The Uninvited.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, maybe.
This is... actually, this is flattering to you in a way, Ryan.
Oh.
This is... Well, I think this says good things about you. Because I know you don't mind watching a type of movie like A Tale of Two Sisters. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you'd actually rate this one higher, knowing it'd be like the wrong thing to do, I think says worlds about you as a movie critic.
I try to be honest.
And that if you really think this is a better movie, then just come out and say it. Don't act like you're like, oh yeah, Tale of Two Sisters is art. There's no way around it.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah, I try to be honest. You know, without.
Oh shucks.
You know stuff.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. No, thank you.
Stuff and things.
And I mean, you're the same way, just we happen to disagree this time.
Oh, whatever.
I
completely disagree with me being the same way.
What? Why would you disagree with that?
Okay. So, 7 and a 4.
Indeed. You know, and again, I emphasize popcorn movie 7, you know, is a little bit different than psychological 7, but there it is.
Well, I think that's about it for the week, Ryan.
It is.
But I think we should, when we wrap this thing up, we should take this outside and settle it like man.
Pugilists? A little bit of hand-to-hand?
Yeah, some murder ball, maybe.
Murder ball?
Yeah.
Would we have to be in wheelchairs to play murder ball?
It's some death race, perhaps? Maybe a little thumb wrestling thrown in there?
Different than when you first... Thumb wrestling?
Yeah, wear your hat.
I am.
We'll get the whole thing on film, at least.
Oh, a video podcast of us wrestling would sell millions of something.
This is the gayest podcast we've ever done.
That was not
on purpose at all. Well, we'll start rehearsing these bits.
There was that podcast where we made out, but I think that was made.
Yeah, but luckily, you know, it was all just smooching noises, so they didn't quite know who it was. But now that you've told them...
Oh, yeah.
Jeez.
All right. Well, we encourage everybody to go to critical-end.com. That's the blog. You'll see a podcast archive up there, so you can see any old episodes that you missed. And you can read our sporadic reviews of movies that we write on the blog, as well as movie news we talk about and other musings. Feel free to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, subscribe to the blog with the feed reader of your choice, or just visit us every day. And it's a good time.
It was. I want to press really quick that we don't just do horror movies. I know it seems that way now.
It's kind of the season for
this one and the last. Yeah, it's, you know, Oscar season. That's when all the horror movies
come out. That's right. We will be talking about the Oscars, by the way, so we won't be talking about any horror movies on that show. Except we probably will. We'll be like, well, Benjamin Button isn't as good as The Eye. Let me tell you about that. So,
oh, that Jessica Alba.
Not that version.
Oh, okay. Well, that's it for me. I'm done.
All right. I'm Ryan.
Going home. And I'm Logan.
And we will see you next week.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. I hate you so much!
Kevin MacLeod.